I'll be curious if you've ever heard these terms. We say swap till you drop, defer till you die. You can do this until you pass away. And we do this through what's known as the 1031 exchange, which is a tax deferred exchange. It's funny because I'll kind of cover what a DST is real quick so that you can understand. So the Delaware Statutory Trust is that there's going to be a much larger company called the sponsor who's going to go out and they're going to acquire a property. They're going to put it in this trust and investors can come in and own fractional ownership. That's why it's geared for those passive real estate investors because they're no longer taking on those day-to-days. That's a great way to test run DSTs to see if maybe in the future it's a good fit for you. We call it boot, that delta on that exchange. So you can try to reinvest that.
Ashley, hey, welcome to Real Estate Development, Land to Legacy. I was trying to think about how to start this episode, and why don't I just let you explain your niche and how you can help developers in what they do with the services that you offer?
Sure. Yeah, so I'll give a quick intro on who I am and what I do. So my name is Ashley Romiti. I'm the founder of GCA 1031. And where I work with real estate investors is when they're, you know, selling their real estate, maybe they've gone in, they've built up a portfolio, and maybe they've owned it for a long time, or possibly they've just gotten into the real estate market and realized that it's not for them. They don't like the day-to-day. Where I work with investors is helping them exit that active real estate position and transition to a passive real estate investment. And we do this through what's known as the 1031 exchange, which is a tax-deferred exchange. And the investments that I represent are called Delaware Statutory Trusts. And so DSTs are real estate, are trusts that own real estate, where these active developers and investors can get out of their real estate and move into this new structure, all while deferring their capital gains. The goal is for capital preservation, investing in something that gives you some income, right? That's the goal. And then possibly some appreciation, depending on the type of asset class that you're investing into.
Cool. So let's break it down step by step. I know a little bit about 1031s, but for those who are not familiar, can you give like a super easy explanation?
Yeah. So the 1031 exchange, it's a tax code, 1031. And what most investors will use it for, it's where you can buy and sell real estate within the United States, all while deferring your taxes. So a good way to think about it for maybe new investors coming in or those who own real estate, it is a way for you to exit that property and go into a new property without taking that tax hit. So a lot of times what, you know, we'll see in the beginning of a investor's investment career is that maybe they go out, they buy a single family home or they buy a small commercial property and they've owned it, they've built up some equity and they're ready to take that next step. Maybe they're ready to go from a single family home to a duplex or a fourplex. Well, in order to do that, they can sell that initial property. It's called the relinquished property. And using this 1031 exchange, they can go and they can buy that to that duplex or that fourplex, all while deferring your capital gains. And the reason why this is so important, if those listening have not sold real estate before, is that when you buy your property and you see that appreciation year over year, when you go and sell that property, that's known as a capital gain. And you will have to, you know, if you don't do the 1031 exchange, there are taxes that you'd have to pay. So I'm based out of California. I work with quite a few California investors. When they sell their real estate, especially if they've owned it for a long time and it's had, you know, strong appreciation, maybe it's gone from a $200,000 investment to a $2 million investment, they're looking at paying upwards of, you know, 30, 40% in taxes on that sale. So that's what the 1031 exchange is utilized for. It's also deferral of depreciation recapture. So if you own real estate, you get some tax benefits. You get to deduct it, the depreciation. is the wear and tear of that real estate over time. When you go and you sell that real estate, you've already taken these deductions. Well, the IRS says we want some of that back. So typically we're looking upwards of 25% of depreciation recapture paid back. So that was a long-winded way of saying when you sell real estate, you can owe a lot of taxes, and the 1031 exchange allows you to defer those taxes. We call it, I'll be curious if you've ever heard these terms, right? We say swap till you drop, defer till you die, right? You can do this until you pass away. And so for investors, it's a great way to build up portfolios over time. And then you get to pass it along to your beneficiaries, your kids, with that step up in basis.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. I recently met a gentleman who has been doing it for the last, I want to say, 20 years. He would buy properties, sit on them for a couple of years, flip them. And I think you have a window of, 60 days or 90 days when you could replace the original property with the new property?
A little bit tighter than that. So from when you sell your property, you have 45 days to identify. And then you have 180 days from the day you close to actually buy. So it's pretty quick timeline. One of my big pushes for investors is to understand the exchange so that you don't get into that 45-day window and then start looking. Because I think that's where one of the biggest hiccups or mistakes for real estate investors comes into play.
Okay. And so when they pass away, is that when capital gains tax is due, or does it translate then into some sort of an inheritance tax?
Yeah. So when you pass away, right, depending on how the structure real estate is structured, you get that step up in basis. And then you're looking at a different set of taxes, right? Because you have that step up. So you shouldn't have those gains that you, like if I were to own a property for 40 years and sell it, it's going to look a lot different than if I were to pass it on to my daughter who gets that step up in basis where it essentially can wipe out those gains that you owe.
Gotcha. Okay. That's cool. Now, with development, is it the same formula? When you develop real estate, so you started with a piece of land, nothing on it, then you invested money, you built something, you created that additional value. If you were to sell it and exchange and use a 1031, does it work the same way?
So that's a good question. It's kind of a gray area, and I have to preface this with I'm not a CPA, so you always want to talk to your accountant. But what the IRS is looking for is that they want the property has to be held for investment purposes. So if the intent is to buy it and develop and sell, that might not hold up. If the intent is to buy it, develop, hold on to the investment for investment purposes, and then maybe down the line, you get an offer that you can't resist or your strategy changes, that's where the 1031 exchange comes into play. It's all about what is that intent with the real estate on the front end. So a lot of times I'll get calls from like flippers. They'll, you know, want to go and rehab a house or something. And that part is always gray. It's, you know, talk with your CPA because they do want to see that you've held the real estate for a certain amount of time, that you've held it just for this investment sake.
Right. Well, yeah, I'm not a flipper and definitely not a CPA, but my understanding is if you're in business of flipping, let's say, or developing and selling like a merchant developer, then it's not an investment per se that 1031 is intended for. And so in that case, it's really not gray. It's you just can't do it because if this is your income, again, that's what I was advised years ago. So argue with me if there's another way of looking at it or potentially structuring it in a beneficial way.
On the safer side, and I want to say, you know, from what I understand of the tax code, it's not something that is probably recommended. But have I talked to people who have done it? Sure. But I don't know how that would stand up in case you were audited, right? So, do at your own risk, but have a CPA back you up. But really, the important part is that this 1031 exchange is geared towards those who want to hold for investment properties. So you can develop the asset, right? You can build it so long as you're not going to sell it right away, right? We want to maybe hold on to a few years, earn the income, build up some equity.
I was going to say, it definitely becomes even grayer. In my case, a lot of my clients are owners who held that land for a long period of time, and then they decided to develop it. So, yes, they held it on for a long period of time. That was an investment property. Then they developed it, increased the value. Maybe they hold on to it for a couple more years and operate it as a new developed property. Maybe they sell it. But definitely there's nuances to study and to understand a little bit better and get a CPA advice.
Yeah, and you never know. I'll just say real quick, I've heard stories of, you know, people buying real estate with the intent to develop and they've owned it for 20 years and then they go to sell it and they do an exchange and they held it for 20 years, but because they couldn't show the IRS that they did end up holding it for investment purposes, the exchange was not permitted and they had to go back and pay taxes. So it really, this is why it's so important to have that CPA involved, because it's not black and white.
Right, right. I get it. Why Delaware?
So Delaware is definitely a trust. It's just the state in which the trust is structured. It's funny because I'll kind of cover what a DST is real quick so that you can understand. So the Delaware Statutory Trust is, there's going to be a much larger company called the sponsor who's going to go out and they're going to acquire a property. They're going to put it in this trust and investors can come in and own fractional ownership. That's why it's geared for those passive real estate investors, because they're no longer taking on those day-to-days. At any given time, right, there's 80 to 100 different DSTs available in the market. I don't know if I've seen any in Delaware in the last few years. That's just where the trust is. That's how right. The entity was structured. But the DST, those are real estate assets that are spread across the United States. Typically where we see the deals today are going to be in what we would call your landlord-friendly or your tax-friendly states, right? I'm in California. You tell me how many people you talk to that are just gung-ho about coming to California and developing. It's not
many. Not many.
I love California. I'm born and raised here, but would I do a project? Probably not. Because you want to lean into those states that are going to be more favorable for you, one, through the development, but also on the hold period, right? Having those landlord-friendly laws, having those lower tax, lower taxes, hopefully fewer, you know, reassessments. And so yeah, the deals that we're looking at aren't necessarily in Delaware. They're usually in like the Sun Belt states, the Midwest, sometimes on the East, like the Carolinas, Georgia. A little bit in like, they push for, you know, Arizona, Nevada. Yeah.
But I guess when I said why Delaware, I didn't necessarily mean projects being done in Delaware. But does Delaware have some sort of a unique legal statutes that they're favorable to be the governing state for those types of trusts?
So on that one, I'm afraid that is a legal question that I'm going to have to defer. So in 2004, these were structured. When we look at the 1031 exchange, you have to reinvest in what's known as like-kind property. And so one of the biggest misconceptions is that like-kind means, okay, I'm selling this hotel, I have to go buy another hotel. Like-kind is really just falls in that investment category. Like, am I holding it for investment purposes? So you can sell a single family home and buy an apartment complex, or you can sell a motel and buy a piece of land. Well, historically, right, when we're looking at LLCs and corporations, those entities are the ones that have to do the exchange. The only way to do fractional ownership pre-2004 was really in this tenant in common structure, TICs. And so the DSTs, I cannot tell you exactly the law as to why it's the Delaware Statutory Trust, but I can tell you that DSTs have become the prominent avenue in which investors can get this fractional ownership that provides that passive income that doesn't set them up for the liabilities of the TIC structure, the tenant in common, which pre-2008, 2009 was the more favorable way to put together these 1031 eligible syndications.
Okay. So if I'm a sponsor and I'm raising capital for a project, I could set it up as a DST and then sell fractional shares in the trust to limited partners. Is that the idea?
Not to not to limited partners. It would just, when you come into the DST, you are actually going to be a fractional owner of the real estate. So we're going to go out to the retail market, and it won't be structured as that LP. It is the DST. But what it looks like, and it looks a little bit different than your, you know, traditional syndications, in that the sponsor will go, maybe they put together a $100 million offering. They won't necessarily have equity in that deal once the equity is raised. So they're going to bring the property out for $100 million. Let's say you get 100 investors all bringing in $1 million. Those investors are the owner of the real estate. And that's important to highlight, because unlike your traditional syndications, we're looking at different structures in regards to how your basis carries forward for depreciation schedule, what it looks like on the appreciation on the back end, and then most importantly, that 1031 exchange eligibility.
Okay. So interesting.
But yeah, just to kind of speak to the sponsor and what they do, they're going to go and they put the deal together, and then they go out to the retail market. So, you know, some of the big sponsors might have 3 or 4 deals available at a time. Some of them only bring out 1 deal at a time. And so they'll bring out, you know, this $50 million multifamily in Georgia. They'll go out to advisors or representatives like myself. They'll raise the capital. That deal will close. And then they'll go and they'll do the next deal.
Got it. Is each DST set up for individual property, or can one DST be set up to acquire multiple properties?
So that it can be both. So a DST can have, you know, what we typically see in DSTs are institutional quality assets. So what I mean by that is if we're looking at multifamily, it's going to be typically a Class A multifamily, core market, newly built, maybe 300 to 400 units. So they're not your smaller assets. It's if you go into these, you know, where the economies are growing, where we see a migration of people, where we see new businesses, we see new industries that are thriving there. And so each DST, they'll select, right? Do we want one property? Do we want a portfolio? Typically, it's going to depend on asset class. So on the multifamily, we usually see one strong multifamily. Sometimes 2 or 3, but typically it's going to be one. On, for example, a DST can also have self-storage. We'll see a lot of portfolios. So you might see 4 self-storage assets in one DST. Net lease properties, right? So your dollar stores, your tractor supplies. Typically, we'll see a portfolio of those in one DST. And so it's up to the sponsor. But what's going to drive it a lot of times is, you know, what the opportunity is, what the demand for is in the market. And also, you know, what's the asset that they're bringing into that DST?
Okay. And is the sponsor typically also a member of the DST, or are they outside of the trust?
They typically do not hold an equity position in the DST. They are going to manage the DST. So I'm glad that you asked that, because the sponsor, while they don't hold that position, they are the number one that you need to review when you're looking at these investments, because at the end of the day, that is who you're investing with. That's going to be who's managing the real estate through the hold period, right? The hold period is typically going to be 5 to 7 years for DSTs. So you need to know who the sponsor is. That being said, the biggest DST sponsors in the space are not your mom and pop shops, right? These are firms. Cantor Fitzgerald, Inland, Exchange Rate, they have private and public REITs. They have, you know, they have billions of assets under management. So they're not new to the game. But yeah, typically, you know, it's great if we see a deal that has sponsor taking some equity in the deal, but it's not common.
Interesting. I'm trying to correlate DST to a more typical syndication. When we raise capital for a syndication, there's all sorts of legal disclosures and
PPMs
and subscription agreements and all that. Do the DST have similar set of legal disclosures and SEC compliance?
Yeah, so they might be a 506B or 506C, right? That kind of directs how you can raise capital on the deals and how you can market. You'll get, when you want to invest, there are PPMs. private placement. It's private placement memorandum. These are 200 to 300 page documents that outline the deal. So it's going to look the same, right? This is still a security. The structure of the deal is just going to be different, right? Like on a traditional syndication, you might see that waterfall exit on the back. We don't have that in DSTs. If you are 1% owner in the real estate, you're going to win 1% of the appreciation on the back end. Albeit there, you know, there'll be fees for closing. There might be some fees incurred that the sponsor is going to take on the back end, but it is going to look different than the traditional syndication where you're coming in the partner. There might be an 80-20 split on the back end. That's not what you see with the DSTs.
I see. Interesting. But so when the sponsor decides to liquidate an asset, in a syndication, they're typically the GP. They manage the portfolio or the asset. And when they decide that it's time to liquidate, they liquidate. And limited partners typically don't have a say in that. They get their distribution based on the waterfall structure and whatnot. Since they are in the DST, they're not technically limited partners. How does that work?
So it's going to be the same. The sponsor is going to make the decision on when to sell, right? So they're going to raise the equity today. I said the typical hold period is going to be 5 to 7 years. That's just the time frame. If you look historically at the real estate market, right, where we're going to see the cycle that the sponsors are going to be able to sell with the most upside potential for investors. And so the sponsor is still going to make that decision on the sale. If their intent is to do best for the investors, they will have, like I said, they have those fees on closing, but these sponsors are bringing out new deals, right? They are continuing trying to capture the 1031 market, which frankly, we are in a unique position where we're going to see over, I think it was $17 billion in real estate transacted in the near term as baby boomers look to get rid of their real estate assets and transition into something more passive. So the sponsor's reputation is extremely important on those capital raises. So they are looking to do the best to the investor on that exit, get them the return, try to hit the return projections. Obviously, nothing is guaranteed. So that when that deal closes, right? So we have a DST that goes full cycle. It sells for $120 million. That means that there's $120 million in the 1031 space ready to be placed with pre-established DST investors. So what the sponsor's goal is to hopefully they did well enough that that investor is going to roll their funds into the next DST fund with them. So that's the goal. Whereas, you know, most of the syndications we look at, we're looking for there's probably more upside potential in your traditional syndication that the investors are coming in for, right? They're maybe looking for those double-digit IRRs, which is very different on how a DST is structured. The DST has restrictions, right? It's known as the seven deadly sins. There's restrictions on what can and can't be done. They can't do a capital call. They can't renegotiate the debt terms. And so because of that, the overall investment is just going to be a lot different. And what I tell investors when, you know, they come to me, they're looking for investment opportunities. The DST is designed for those investors who really want that capital preservation after they've built up some equity. You don't want to go chasing returns. Syndications, you're going to probably find more upside potential, but there's different risks, right? You might need to be prepared for that capital call or, so it's a different, I would say it's just a different investor profile when we're looking at the two.
Right. No, it makes perfect sense. It sounds like it's not going to be a DST structure, not going to be a fit to raise capital for a development project, but it could potentially be a fit for a takeout when the project is finished, developed, stabilized. Maybe instead of selling it off, it may make sense for a development company to set up a DST to then bring in new investors that would hold and operate that asset. Do you see DSTs set up by smaller operators, or is it primarily reserved for these large REITs that you mentioned before?
So the industry is growing. Right. I started in real estate about 15 years ago. And when someone brought up DST to me, it was a small industry. I frankly wasn't even putting clients into deals back then because they looked different. We are seeing far more sponsors come into the space. And it's funny what you just said with the, you know, maybe you develop a deal and put it into a DST, because we are seeing that with some of the sponsors, right? These sponsors aren't strictly doing DSTs. A lot of them will have a development deal where they raise capital for the development. Once it's stabilized, they might sell that to a DST and then go raise capital for the DST, because now they're working with both investor profiles. They're working with those ones that want that higher return, potential return. And then they're looking at those ones who want a more stabilized asset. And so, yeah, we are seeing tons of new sponsors come into this space. And I expect it to continue to grow, right? I mentioned how much real estate is going to be sold in the next few years. And, you know, a lot of companies see that opportunity. And so, like, what my role is to figure out who the good companies are, right? Because the mom and pop doesn't mean bad, but it means that they might need more scrutiny to look at what they're doing, yeah.
Yeah, so you work primarily with investors, and then you help investors place capital with the right DST. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Then tell me about your screening criteria. If somebody comes into you with $1 million that they want to place in a structure like that, you have presumably an unlimited pool of DSTs that you could look at. How do you decide who to recommend?
Yeah. So, right. We have all these sponsors. There's only X number of sponsors that I'm going to recommend. You want to work with sponsors who have the experience, who have gone through market downturns, who I can look at and confidently say, right, like, we're trying to find the best deals for you, but I have no guarantee. Right. And I think one of the most historical moments we all will ever experience is COVID, where we saw market disruption like no one could have ever imagined, right? So in my mind, I'm prepared. I'm trying to set you up for the best, but we're going to prepare for the worst, right? So number one, we want to look at the sponsor. How have they performed? Who's their management team? How are they underwriting? What's their acquisition criteria? And we're going to look at the real estate, right? So not all real estate's created equal. If you're out and you're looking at real estate, you can look at different markets. You can, there's a lot of different variables. What's the acquisition cap rate compared to where the markets, compared to market rates? And so we look at the sponsor, we look at the real estate, and then you look at the trust structure, right? I talked about those PPMs. So that's how we look at the deals. As for the investor, though, it's going to vary. When you're in your 1031 exchange, you're going to have different equity and debt requirements. So we want to take into consideration that. Different investors have different goals, right? So one investor might be very focused on income. One might want some more appreciation. That's going to drive us into seeing, okay, what asset class is best for you? What market shows the most growth? So we look at the deals. You know, there's certain deals that I'm going to be recommending at any given time to an investor. But it's not going to be the same for every investor, because each investor has a different mindset. They have different goals. They have different requirements. And that's what we want to take into consideration. For me and what I do at GCA 1031 is we want to look at the broader picture. DSTs are a great solution for the right investor. But if I had a client come to me and say, hey, these are my goals. I want this appreciation. You know, I'm in growth mode. That's when I would step back and say, you know what, DSTs might not be for you. Maybe you need to call Eugene and, you know, find some sort of development project. And so it's assessing where the investor is at and pointing them in the right direction. And then only if we've had those conversations and DSTs are a good fit, well, then we start getting into the sponsors, the deals, buy certain deals, right? You know, every investor is different. I have clients who will come to me and they'll say, you know, I'll have a deal in Florida that I really like. And they'll say, I don't want to go to Florida. I'm nervous about hurricanes. And I could talk them blue in the face, but they've made up their mind that Florida is not the state for them. California, right? A lot of people don't want to come to California. So it's taking into consideration what their investment preferences are, because everyone has their own ideas on what they want their portfolio to include. And my job is to help direct them into the correct DSTs based on and meet them where they're at, but also advising, you know, this is a really good deal. Let's talk about if why you don't want to invest there is legitimate, or if it's just maybe a poor past experience. Yeah, so that's the process.
Okay. Ashley, what is the typical range of investments that you see, that you work with?
I mean, so, well, mainly we're looking at different asset classes. So right now we're looking at multifamily is always going to be prevalent, right? We need housing. We have constant development. So we're looking at that. And I have my own opinion on where to invest in multifamily in the asset class. We're looking at commercial. That might be industrial, self-storage, net leased. So I mentioned like your triple net properties. Another unique, the built for rent, by the way, I don't want to forget that. That's also coming up a little bit more. And then a very unique asset class is mineral and oil rights. So that's investing in subsurface rights. That could be a whole other conversation, but that's kind of the broad range of assets that we're looking at. And then in regards to market, I touched on that, right? There's certain metrics we want to see. Office, not so much. We're still not there. I was reading a report this morning. We're slowly seeing Class A office come back. Would I put a client into it today? Probably not. But
yeah, it's interesting to see what's going to happen with the offices. I see some areas where we are seeing pretty close to full occupancy, and then some of the downtowns are like half empty. But how about, let's see what I was going to ask, dollar ranges in terms of investments. Are you primarily working with clients with like $50,000, $100,000, $150,000, or $1-$100 million?
So the total investment can range, right? It can be from $100,000 to $10+ million. But what kind of is important to note on the DST side is one, minimum investments are typically around $100,000. That's not a guarantee. Some are $250,000, some they'll take less, but we usually want to say a minimum of $100,000. Investors coming into DSTs have to be accredited. So accredited per the SEC means that they meet either a net worth or income requirement. Net worth is that they have at least $1 million, excluding their personal residence. Income requirement is $200,000 filing single or $300,000 filing jointly. And so those are the two requirements. And then when a client comes to me, it just depends on, you know, they might have 2 million, they might have 5 million, they might have 10 million, they might have 100,000. What's going to be talked about then is, okay, well, one of the major benefits of DSTs is the diversification that you can achieve, because you can take $1 million, excuse me, put it into four different DSTs, right? So now we're able to mitigate that risk. So that's the more important part. As for the amount of equity, it varies and it's changing. As you know, I'll get a call from a guy who's owned a property for 40 years and it's $3 million, and he's never done an exchange, but he is tired of getting calls. So it's changing and it's growing.
Interesting. All right. And then are you a licensed broker dealer?
No. So I'm a registered representative. So I work at a broker dealer. I have my license with a broker dealer.
Gotcha. Yeah.
With investors.
Got it. That makes sense. Cool. What else should the listener know about 1031s or DSTs or anything else that we haven't talked about yet?
So for developers, I mean, it's a different, you guys are going to be a different category. You're looking for that growth. Where I work with a lot of developers, I'd say, is when you're doing the 1031 exchanges, and maybe you've sold a project for $2 million, and your next project is $1.5 million, and you have $500,000 sitting with left over that you can't frankly do much in your project with, but you don't want to pay taxes on. That's a great way to test run DSTs to see if maybe in the future it's a good fit for you. Is just, we call it boot, right? That delta on that exchange. So you can try to reinvest that. And so the DSTs for the developers is going to look a lot different, but it's something to think about. Maybe you had a project that didn't go too well and you're ready to sell it, but you don't have anywhere to reposition it. You know, it's just that alternative strategy. And then for those who have owned their real estate for a long time, maybe they've owned some land and it's not panning out for a great development project. That's a good way to look at the DSTs.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I think that should do it. We'll put contact information in the show notes. Ashley, is there anything else you would like to point out, how to contact you or any other informational giveaways that you could offer to the listeners?
Yeah. So if you want to go, if you're looking at these strategies, you want to learn about 1031 exchanges, DSTs, other strategies, right, that we didn't even get to touch on, you can go to my website, gca1031.com, and there's an ebook that you can download. Also, I love talking about real estate, so you can call me directly. My number is 949-235-5606. I throw it out there because I do love to talk to clients, and I'm always happy to just help them strategize on what their next step is.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Ashley. Appreciate this information. This was truly new to me, so I personally learned a lot. I love when that happens, and I don't have to fake my questions because I'm truly genuinely interested.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for having me. Real estate development. Land of legacy.